Welcome to this Peer Voice activity. To access the entire activity, including supporting material, go to www.peervoice.com/EUM. This activity is supported by an educational grant from Advanced Accelerator Applications, a Novartis company. Welcome to this Peer Voice panel discussion on prostate cancer. This activity comprises two presentations featuring a panel of experts. At any time during this presentation, you may download supporting materials and share this activity with colleagues.
Hello and welcome to our panel discussion on radioligand therapy in metastatic prostate cancer from initiation to completion. I'm Bertrand Tombal, an oncourologist from Université Catholique de Louvain in Belgium, and I will be your moderator. I will be joined by Louise Emmett from St. Vincent Hospital, Sydney, Australia. She's a nuclear physician, and by Anmun Chong, a urologist from National University Hospital, Singapore. And we will explore this vital topic together. Thank you for joining us. So the first question is, what is the rationale for ligand therapy? Louise, your people, nuclear physician, develop this treatment. What is the rationale?
The rationale is about targeted treatment. It's about delivering high doses of radiation directly to the cell using cell receptors. And we do this by very clever small proteins that have the nuclear warhead attached. We can inject these intravenously. They go into the system. They enter through the receptor. And the idea is it washes out everywhere else. So we get very nice targeted treatment response without toxicity. We have this very good system of theranostics, so we can image this as well by clipping on a PET agent to the peptide or using a therapy onto the peptide so we can see it to treat it.
Perfect. Thank you. And based on the clinical data, what can we hope for this patient? Edmund, what do we bring to our patient?
Well, we bring to a patient another option for the treatment of mCRPC because, as we know, the VISION trial did show overall survival benefit. And certainly for those patients who has progressed after one ARPI and one or two lines of chemotherapy, certainly it is another option that can help control the disease and prolong survival. And certainly it has benefits clinically in terms of pain control, improvement of quality of life, and also the time to the next therapy.
Thank you. So that brings us to a new dimension in the multidisciplinary management of these patients, because so far, nuclear physicians were involved in the diagnostic pathway, so not necessarily coming to the MDT. So should we change this approach? Is the nuclear physician also know a very important part of the treatment pathway? And should you be in the MDT?
So I think this has really changed with PSMA PET imaging, not only for radioligand therapy, but also for staging of prostate cancer, biochemical recurrence of prostate cancer, and probably very soon for treatment response with a lot of systemic treatments. So yes, we should have a seat at the table, and I think our patients' care is improved by involving multidisciplinary nuclear medicine physicians as well.
I think an important step is that we expect you to educate us, Louise, on these radioligand, because it's kind of a generic term. So in a nutshell, what is the difference between the various radioligand?
Yeah. So at the moment, we have lutetium PSMA 617 and lutetium PSMA INT, the two radioligands that are used most in prostate cancer. These are beta emitters. They're very small peptides. They get into the system very fast. But we're going to have an explosion in our specialty in prostate cancer in the various radioligands that are being used. We're going to move from beta emitters to alpha emitters. They're already in phase one and phase two trials. These are very, very powerful radionuclides. They really pack a punch. They have more toxicity. We're going to move to different peptides as well. So that's also whether you use an antibody or a peptide. And we're going to need to continue to educate you as we move forward while we educate ourselves in a specialty that's going to change year on year.
So what are the specificity of radioligand therapy administration? Once again, you, Louise.
So what we do with radioligand therapy administration, patients get admitted, they get an intravenous administration. They will be radioactive for people around them for a few hours until they pass it out, predominantly in the urine. And so we do have recommendations which are different in every country for how long the patient has to be admitted and whether they need to stay overnight or whether they can go home. And then we need to be careful about the side effects. So we need to predict side effects and make sure we manage those as well. They're generally reasonably easily controlled, but we need to be aware of them.
So, Anne-Mon, you're the physician who follow this patient and who is basically is doing the one bringing them to the MDT to discuss radioligand. So I've got two questions for you. The first one is when do you discuss with them radioligand, and how do you briefly position this versus the other available treatment?
Yes, I think that's a good question. Basically, this therapy at this point, based on the VISION trial, we position them as one of the options for mCRPC if they progress beyond an ARPI and one or two lines of chemotherapy. There are other options as well that we discuss about, for example, cabazitaxel, but we know in the therapy study there's some advantage of lutetium PSMA over cabazitaxel. And of course, we also advise molecular testing with HR mutation with the event of possibility of using PARP inhibitors, but this definitely represents one of the important options for treatment.
And afterwards, so patient has been treated, how do you follow this patient? Because, we know that the follow-up in the clinical trial is very rigid. It's very, you know, it's imposed by the protocol, but we don't have this protocol in routine clinic. So how are you following this patient after the completion of the radioligand therapy?
Yes, I think the follow-up patients is in two perspectives. One, we look into the efficacy, and the other in terms of side effects. In terms of efficacy, our protocol is that we look at the serum PSA after two cycles and at the end of the treatment, usually 4 to 6 weeks after. Of course, after every cycle, we do a SPECT CT, and that allows us to understand a little bit of the uptake and also potentially efficacy. In terms of side effects, we monitor the patient clinically to look for improvement of symptoms, the overall condition of the patient, as well as looking at blood markers for which we usually monitor a CBC or full blood count to look for marrow toxicity and renal function generally about every 2 weekly until after the treatment. Of course, we recognize that different institutions and practices have different protocols for this.
I've got a question for you both, because you know, in a country like mine, following patient with CT scan and bone scan, I would be a little bit provocative, but say it only happened in clinical trial. So we use more and more modern imaging technology. So Louise, do you think that there is or there will be more and more a role for using PSMA imaging in these patients?
Absolutely. We need to develop the evidence for that, but I think they're very powerful tools as biomarkers. I'm going to correct you, though. It's not. We do SPECT after each imaging, and we get very good ideas to how much PSMA activity there is persistent in each tumor deposit and whether there's an increase in tumor volume. But we do use the diagnostic CT as well routinely in these patients, because you get heterogeneous disease progression. You can get liver metastases, visceral metastases that you don't see on the PSMA imaging. So SPECT CT, PSMA PET CT, I think that's the future.
Thank you. Anmon, do you think we're going to evolve towards that approach as well?
Yes, I think PSMA PET CT for monitoring is becoming more and more common. However, in our part of the world, we also balance the fact that this imaging can be expensive. And therefore, we do our clinical PSA monitoring as well. And really, we discuss the option of PSMA PET versus conventional imaging fairly routine or very commonly.
So thank you. So if I can summarize that session, we know radioligand therapy will change the face of prostate cancer. So the first and most important message is we need to involve all nuclear physicians in the discussion. We need them to better decide when the treatment should be done, to give it, and probably more and more in helping us to monitor the outcome and the benefit of this treatment. So, Louise and Moon, thank you for that session. Thank you for attention, and please join us in the next episode of this discussion. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our panel discussion on optimizing radioligand therapy in men with metastatic prostate cancer, managing adverse reaction. I'm Bertrand Tombal from the Université Catholique de Louvain in Belgium. I'm an onco-urologist, and I will be your moderator. Joined today with me are Louise Emmett from St. Vincent's Hospital, Sydney, Australia. Dr. Emmett is a nuclear physician and a urologist, and Moon Choing from National University Hospital, Singapore. Together, we will explore this important topic, and thank you for being with us. So, let's start first. What would be the key safety and tolerability of that treatment? And I'm going to ask the question from the field. So, Edmund, how do you see the toxicity of that treatment vis-a-vis all the other drugs we've been using in prostate cancer so far?
Well, you know, I think with the understanding that patients currently on these kind of treatments have seen a couple of lines of therapy with ARPI and chemotherapy, I would say that given that kind of understanding, these patients are tolerated relatively reasonably well in the sense that we don't see huge amount of grade 3 events. But certainly, I think it's more tolerable than chemotherapy like docetaxel and cabazitaxel. And certainly, I think it's sometimes comparable with ARPI, perhaps with a little bit different features. So I think in general, it's fairly well tolerated.
So, Luis, when we recommend this treatment, we would send the patient to the nuclear physician to get an introductory explanation. What do you tell them? What are the side effects that are the most common, the most worries, and is there a specific time when they occur?
Yeah, so I really talk to the patients based on volume of disease. In those patients with advanced disease, very high volume, perhaps they have pain when they turn up. These are the patients who have problems with pain flare in the first few days. We make sure they have a pain management plan. Quite often we will give those patients a preemptive dexamethasone just to dampen the symptoms. These patients are also more at risk of early fatigue, so they can get quite profound fatigue in the first week, and they can get some nausea. So I tell the patients about all of that. All patients will have mild dry mouth. That is something that gets a little bit worse with each injection, but it's very manageable with minor adjustments in the way they manage their dental hygiene, and they can use some aids for that. And then I talk to everyone about the most important side effect, which is not controlling their disease or disease progression. So we definitely have a discussion about the likelihood that they're going to have a response to the treatment.
Is there any safety consideration? Meaning, is there a patient we should not send to you, basically?
So I think there are a number of safety considerations. One is patients who have severe marrow compromise at the time that they're being considered for treatment. So we can very much treat patients with marrow compromise. Severe marrow compromise is going to have a lot of considerations between the oncologist, the patient, and the nuclear medicine physician at what level is safe to treat and what we actually expect to get for that patient. Patients who have severe renal impairment because they have obstructed kidneys, we definitely try and stent those patients before we treat them, and we try and reverse any potential renal problems prior to treatment. But we can actually treat patients pretty well, even patients who are ECOG 2, without too many problems.
And Moon, in comparison to other treatment, what kind of practical strategies do you put in place to minimize the side effect? Do you make specific recommendation for this?
Well, I think the important aspect of preventing adverse events is, as mentioned, to look whether they have enough reserves before they start treatment. And that usually comes in the form of labs to look at their blood counts, their hemoglobin, their platelet counts, and also renal function to ensure that they have enough reserves for the treatment. And of course, as already mentioned by Luis, we look into possibly steroids, which can help with fatigue as well as with the nausea, with symptomatic pre-medication for nausea, and also good pain control with certain pathways or pain specialist management to help them during the pre-treatment phase, as well as during the monitoring of the treatment phase.
Thank you. An important question physicians are facing is when should we stop the treatment? Because we've been struggling with radium for months and years because it was extremely difficult to say whether it was working or not. And beyond extreme toxicity, it was difficult to decide when to interrupt treatment. For PSMA lutetium, it seems to some extent different. We can rely on PSA, we can rely on imaging. What should we look at, and when should we say, no, stop? So I'm going to ask when to stop from the nuclear physician view, and then when to stop from the clinician view. So, Louise.
So a lot of our decisions are based on where the patient is in their journey. If they are post all available treatments and this is a palliative treatment, the question is, do you want excellent treatment response or are you happy with stable? That's a big discussion with the patient. When we interrupt treatment, a hard stop would be a severe marrow impairment, something that's going to cause real problems if we continue to treat them. And soft stops are on imaging when we develop mismatch disease, new liver lesions, disease we cannot treat with lutetium PSMA on its own. And then, of course, patients who have evidence of progression, serial progression, after two or three doses, who have reasonable marrow and have the option of other available treatments.
Anmond?
Yes, I would agree. I think first and foremost, as a clinician, we look at the overall condition of the patient, whether there's clinical deterioration, whether there's progression of pain or other debilitating symptoms. That gives you an idea, you know, whether the patient is responding or not. Of course, we get advice from our friendly nuclear physicians who tell us, you know, whether there is a discrepancy in terms of uptakes or, you know, whether there's response or not. But I think importantly, we also look at the progression, whether there's PSA progression despite the treatment. And if there's no response with PSA, that's a bit concerning. Unlike radium, where we don't, PSA is not so reliable, I think we do have other tools, we have tools to help us monitor the progression of patient. And certainly, adverse events is very important in helping us decide for interruption or discontinuation.
So in contrast to other treatment, PSMA lutetium is really a multidisciplinary management, because when so far what we have a lot is multidisciplinary discussion. But if you do a prostatectomy, the radiation oncologist is not needed. And if we do radiation, the surgeon is not needed. Here, really, both are needed to follow the patient, meaning that we need to organize that collaboration. For instance, a good example is, are you organized in your institution to take care of the side effect? Who is taking care of what? Because one of the danger of having two people involved is that nobody's there when something happens. So how do you see practically that multidisciplinary management in your center? Louise?
We have shared care. We don't have a patient who's managed by one discipline or the other. In fact, we divide our treatments at the moment three weekly on the day of treatment and 24 hours the week after. It's nuclear medicine who's contacting the patient. We're managing those early symptoms. Three weekly, they see their medical oncologist, and that's in a recurring cycle as long as the patient's being treated with lutetium PSMA. That works extremely well in our institution.
And Moon, how do you manage that?
Yes, I think the collaboration is very important. I think this is firstly to avoid side effects, but also to have a very good communication with our nuclear physician so that, you know, there is understanding of what's going on. But as likewise, we do have regular follow-ups at the early part after treatment by the nuclear physician, and then 2 to 3 weeks by the urologist or medical oncologist. And we kind of take turns to reduce duplication as well.
So thank you. Thank you, Luis. Thank you, Unman. Very important messages. So PSMA lutetium is a relatively safe and well-tolerated treatment, but it needs to be managed with a good consideration of who is doing what and being careful to monitor the benefit and the toxicity at each time. Thank you very much for this discussion, and thank you for all who listened to us.
This has been an activity published by Peer Voice.